This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Robin Ryan, Callie Mikhail, Don Zur, and Ken Jones. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386. Oregon Governor Kate Brown's number is 503-378-3111. Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Callie.
And I'm Ken Jones. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Abe Proctor and Joe Uris host the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with special guests Abe and Joe. At 9, on Alternative Radio, poet, critic, and columnist Katha Pollitt speaks on the fate of legal abortion. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Dennis Bernstein hosts Flashpoints. At 11, Stage and Studio presents the Breast Cancer Monologues, a documentary for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And at 11:30, it's Art Focused with host Andre Middleton. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you want to become a member or renew your membership, you can always go to kboo.fm on the web and click on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for an interview with Jim Robinson about the Portland Harbor Community Action Group, which today submitted its report to the Environmental Protection Agency about the progress of the cleanup of the Willamette River Superfund site. Good night, Ken.
Good night, Callie. Good night, Danielle.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The most recent round of delays for cleaning up the Portland Harbor after a century of industrial usage along 11 nautical miles of the Willamette River have drawn criticisms laid out in a report to an agency housed within the Environmental Protection Agency. KBOO reporter Robin Ryan spoke with Jim Robinson, chair of the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, about their concerns over how much time and money has already been spent to reclaim the river from the impact of its prior commercial use.
Is there a way to ascertain how much has already been spent and on what portion of the overall task? At what stage would you contend the effort is at?
We're talking in the range of up to $100 million that's been spent on all the studies and research and planning up to this stage, as well as some early action cleanup that has been done to clean up some spots that were immediate risk and that were isolated or distinguished enough that they could be gotten at in an early action. Yeah, there's been a lot of money spent already. The stage we're at now is we're moving up to next year, probably around March, the EPA will put out their proposed plan. This is getting into the end game of the whole process. The proposed plan is what will actually set forth how EPA wants to see the site cleaned up. There will be a comment period, a public comment period, once the proposed plan is released. And after the public comment period, EPA will make any revisions they need to make and then put out what's called the record of decision. And the record of decision will actually give the order for doing the cleanup and how it is to be done. So the cleanup action itself will probably start in about 2 or 3 years.
If there have been delays, what would you say have been at the root of them?
I think one of the things at the root of the delays is just the fact that it's such a hugely complex site and trying to figure out where all the chemicals are and how they can be cleaned up. There's also been problems with how the Lowell Willamette group, the industry group that's developing the proposals for cleanup, has done some of the work. They haven't necessarily done everything to the extent where the EPA was happy with the work, and so it had to be redone. Now, EPA generally gives direction on how work needs to be done, what needs to be done in developing the plans and doing the investigation on the site, and if the work is not done up to the par of what the EPA outlines, then more needs to be done on it. So when we look at the potentially responsible parties that are out there, the various parties that will be involved in conducting the cleanup, I see two groups among the industry. There's one group that wants to just get it done as fast as possible and declare it done. They don't really care if it's actually cleaned up. They just want it declared done. And another group that wants to put it off as long as they can because they know they're eventually going to have to pay for cleanup. But if they can put it off as long as they can, first there will be less to clean up because some of it will have already washed away or been covered up. But also because it's expenses down the road, that's cheaper to them than spending now.
I have seen a little bit of literature from the Lower Willamette Group, and I couldn't help but feel alarmed at a little phrase. It's two words that stuck out at me in terms of finding solutions that were, quote-unquote, practically achievable. What does that mean?
Well, that could vary based on who you ask. But generally, practically achievable means can you afford to do it with the resources that you have? And there'll be a lot of talk that comes up about how expensive this Superfund process is. But when you consider how big the site is, how many different entities are involved, how much area is involved, and the time that will be involved in doing the actual cleanup, the costs are not out of proportion with other Superfund sites, and not out of proportion with what many of these industry players can afford to do. Some of the industry that's involved here have billions in assets and multi-millions or billions in annual revenues. When we talk about the cost being a couple of billion dollars for the total cleanup, that cost is spread out among multiple parties and is spread out over several years. So it's something that many of these larger corporations that are involved in the process could absorb in their ongoing process. And many of them also would have insurance policies that would cover those costs anyway.
Plans to clean the collection of sites lists alternatives A through F, whereas the CAG is proposing a G plus be adopted. Talk about the differences and why the extra designation.
Okay, the different alternatives actually range from A to G, with A being do nothing. And it's actually required as part of the law that they have to examine what would the result be of doing nothing. And then alternatives B through G outline different levels at which the action needs to be taken on sites in the river. For example, if one alternative says that you will clean up to a level of, say, 50 parts per billion, then another alternative might say you have to clean up any site that has 30 parts per billion. So the difference is if you only clean up sites that have 50 parts per billion or more, you have a smaller footprint than if you clean up sites that have 30 parts per billion or more. And so the footprint changes. The number of acres that need to be actively treated changes. That active treatment could involve dredging, or it could involve some kind of in situ treatment to treat the chemicals if that can be developed to work. It could involve capping material or placing some other kind of enhanced cap material on it. So there are different options for how a site can be treated. One of the biggest points that we're making as a community group is the safest way to ensure that we get a clean river is to remove areas that have contaminant above what is considered a safe or an acceptable level of risk in the river. So our suggestion is to actually increase that footprint even more so that more material is removed and actively treated.
Proposed remedies are seen by this advisory group as 1, unacceptable, and 2, not in keeping with what's required by law. Are you speaking of a state, a municipal, or a federal statute?
That's the Federal Clean Water Act. The Federal Clean Water Act sets standards for contaminant in public waterways. And so the proposals or the plans that have been studied, the alternatives that have been studied in this process so far, don't actually get us to a level where it's clean enough to meet the Federal Clean Water Act standards. What that will require is the EPA, in order to approve one of these alternatives that's in the study, would have to waive the Clean Water Act standard to say that it is not feasible, not possible, technically, to clean up to the level that meets the Clean Water Act standard. We actually believe that it is possible to do that, and we would really encourage the EPA to not waive the Clean Water Act standard, but develop a cleanup plan that does meet the Clean Water Act.
Last year, I found an article with a comment from an economist at the RAND Corporation, and at some point it was suggested that between 28 and 31% of the $2.6 billion that was expected to be spent to clean the harbor up was going to be paid out in legal fees.
That's probably true. But one of the things that the lawyers are spending a lot of time on is figuring out the allocation of the cleanup costs, because they have to be able to allocate that among all of the different companies, figure out who's going to pay how much. And that's a long, long process, major process. And we actually had a discussion a couple months ago with representatives of a couple of the potentially responsible parties who made a comment, an offhand remark about if the cleanup is going to cost a couple billion dollars, that can buy a lot of lawyers.
There's a list of 11 items that are recommendations by the community advisory group in this report. I believe that list was developed late in August by interested and active community members. Number 5 calls for a human health impact assessment to inform the cleanup. Am I to understand that no assessment for human health impact has been completed as of yet?
No, it hasn't. And there's been some discussion with EPA about how that would be done. There does need to be some kind of a health impact analysis done, and aspects of it will be incorporated into what EPA is developing for the proposed plan. But it's something that we are looking at as necessary to really inform the whole process. It may happen in some different degree than what we were originally thinking, but maybe it will happen the way we're thinking about it. It's likely there will be some aspect of it, but maybe not what we initially thought.
We're somewhere 15 years down the line. I'm curious as to how this particular consideration did not make the list of criteria as something to be done by now.
Something we kind of thought should have been done fairly early in the process, but it wasn't. There is a human health risk impact assessment that was done and is part of the process for developing the whole plan. So that baseline human health risk assessment is a part of what's required under the Superfund law, and it was developed and completed. We gave some feedback on how that was done. Generally, it was well done and gives a good picture of how the contaminant that's in the river is impacting human health risk along the river. What the health impact assessment is talking about is really incorporating a lot of other aspects of how the cleanup action, in terms of when the cleanup is done or when the cleanup is completed, to what level it's cleaned up, how those may impact, different scenarios may impact human health. And so it's kind of a different analysis than the baseline human health risk assessment, which was done.
Do you recall how long ago that assessment was done?
That was actually just completed last year. It took several years to complete because there's a lot that goes into it. So it was done over the last several years and I think finalized last year.
I've been talking with Jim Robison. He is the chairman of the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group. I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KABU News. Mm-hmm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Health Club's Body Positive Block Party, Thursday, October 22nd at Health Club in Portland. The Body Positive Block Party is an inaugural bash for Portland's first body positive, worker-owned, community-centered barbell gym. Again, that's the Body Positive Block Party on Thursday, October 22nd, 7 p.m. at Health Club, 1235 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Start your Saturday morning with a little swingin' country. The KBOO Swingin' Country program will be broadcasting live from the Tin Shed Garden Cafe on Saturday, October 24th from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. I know you've been hankering to put a face to those velvety tones, so here's your chance. You are welcome to come early, pull up a chair, and enjoy some coffee, food, and an earful of swingin' country. The Tin Shed Garden Cafe is located at 1438 Northeast Alberta Street in the City of Roses. Again, that's Swingin' Country live from the Tin Shed, Saturday, October 24th, here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Spent most of my life in prison, chasing a dream called justice.
Measure 11, Oregon's one-strike-you're-out law, was passed by Oregonians in 1994. It mandates long-term prison sentences and tries 15-year-olds as adults. Tune in to Prison Pipeline on October 19th to